were plans mooted in the 1880s when they were looking around Burgoyne's Gap and another place called Alex Downfall, which is just a little bit downstream, I think, from the current Weir. And there was talked about for a long time, but it really started in 1919. And it started because of sugar beet,
mm-hmm.
which it was long and political because there was this big sugar beet factory at Maffra that the government had to take over because it was a failure. And then because the government had taken over the sugar beet factory, they needed a supply of sugar beet.
To make it work.
To make it work, exactly. And so because the farmers didn't really want to grow sugar beet, they then had closer settlement schemes around. They had closer settlement around Boysdale, and it was a condition of the farms at Boysdale that they grew X acres of sugar beet.
Okay.
There was a bit growing up at Linden O'Toole, and I'm not sure if that was a closer settlement condition as well, because the beet used to come down on the train.
Yeah.
And sugar beet was a really unpopular crop because it was backbreaking work and it took so much out of the soil and it needed a lot of water. So all the farmers on closer settlement were refusing to grow sugar beet because they didn't have enough water.
Okay.
And hence the birth of the Glenmaggie Dam.
So now, of course, it's so closely associated with the dairy industry, but that had nothing at all to do with it. The people would have had a house cow back then, I suppose, and there was no need for an industrialised dairy sector.
There was industrialised dairying around, but they were much smaller.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't think anyone regretted the water then being there for the dairying, because it was a dairy area fairly early on, even around Stratford. In, I think, 1918, you had the first milking machine in Victoria being shown off and being trialled. So we were leaders in dairy innovation around then as well. So
okay.
Everyone would have looked and said, oh, well, the sugar beet's driving it, but we'll use it as well.
So the idea to construct a major reservoir for water usage, there was the failure of the sugar beet, but who drove it, I suppose?
The Victorian government drove it, to my knowledge. It was a State Rivers and Water Supply project.
So there wasn't a local advocate saying, we need the water. It was probably somebody in Spring Street or the equivalent thereof, a set of public service.
I think it was probably a combination of both.
Okay.
It was definitely the time of, well, here's another major project after the war as well. We've got all these returned men. And for its time, it was huge because it was totally built using steam power and horses. So there's probably bigger reservoirs around Melbourne built around that time as well. But for Gippsland, for all that concrete work driven by steam engines and all the concrete hauled out from the train at Hayfield by horses, it was major. And the first internal combustion engine was a chain-driven truck that came onto the site only right towards the end of the construction.
What on earth is a chain-driven truck?
Oh, you'll need someone better than me on that. I just know that the guys look at me reverently and say, and they brought the first chain-driven truck onto the site.
Right.
So I assume it wasn't, would have had axles, but it wouldn't have been a gearbox of that nature. It literally turned the wheels with a chain.
Like a bicycle in some way.
Yes.
Kind of.
Big bicycle.
Yeah, a very big bicycle. How long did it take to build?
Started in 1919. The first water, basically, I think it was supplied to Boysdale 1926, 1927.
Nice.
So it was a long time. There was a settlement out there. It had its own hall. It had its own school. It had its own post office. And as it started to be built, the water slowly crept up. And that was one of the features of it. The water would be creeping up and it submerged the whole town. Most of the town of Glenmaggie was under the Weir, apart from what was moved up. And around 1925, 1926, it just started to creep up inch by inch. It was inches then, inch by inch. And the pub at Glenmaggie stayed licensed to the last, and on their last night they were standing in knee-deep water at the bar drinking their last drinks and everything. They moved the church at Glenmaggie, the Roman Catholic Church, up onto the hill. You can still see that there, submerged the brick Presbyterian church. And a lot of the town that was submerged was up to the left of what people now know as the big Glenmaggie Bridge.
The impact of this, when did it start to impact? I mean, obviously it impacted on the people who lived in Glenmaggie, but when did it start to impact, I guess, the economy of Gippsland? Was it immediate that perhaps sugar beet became more profitable or more sustainable, and then slowly there was a move towards dairy?
It didn't save sugar beet.
No.
Sugar beet was so unpopular, it did not save sugar beet.
Mm.
And I'm not sure how the end came. I think the last crop was grown in 1949, off the top of my head, but it was gone and finished with long before then. Dairying took over because it was a much easier product to sell. But also sugar beet had conditions attached to it, like the old bakeries, where the Maffra sugar could only be sold within a certain distance of Maffra.
Oh, really?
And there was all sorts of lobbying from the Queensland sugar industry that wanted the sugar restricted as well. So there was all sorts of other politics that saw the end of the sugar beet.
Isn't that fascinating?
Oh, it's a very interesting area. But also there was a second wave for Glenmaggie, where in the 1950s, I think about 1956, I won't time us after the exact year, they put another 6 foot on top of the wall, which was another major area. And that saw a whole lot of people in Hayfield, especially some of the displaced people, and they were there to dig the channels.
By displaced people, displaced from Europe?
Displaced from Europe.
So refugees.
And this is why Hayfield has got such a large population of people from that time that came in as refugees or displaced people from Europe. And they were employed digging the channels out to extend it. I think that's the one. I think that's the one that extended to Nambrock Denison, because the extra 6 foot of water allowed them to extend the area out a lot further, because there was also huge soldier settlement areas out that way as well. So that had an incredible impetus on Hayfield's economy as well. Huge State Rivers and Water Supply camp there with people living in it and that sort of thing.
Just as you're talking, I'm thinking of a whole range of ways in which this project is significant. And, of course, this is, in terms of from our radio point of view, we're talking about significant moments in Gippsland's history. This has, excuse the pun, so many ripples into so many different aspects of life then and now.
It's a huge project on a state basis. Mm. And we just look at it now and say, oh, that's a nice water over there, that's Lake Glenmaggie. And a lot of people think it's only the speedboats.
Mm.
And really, it was put there for the farmers. It's a different farming group using it now, but they've used it from the start. And that's what it was for. And it's really the centrepiece of the agricultural endeavour around most of central Gippsland.
And the other question we always ask, we've touched off on the significance of it, but if it hadn't been developed, what would have happened? This is the whole reframing of history. What if, the what if question. If Glenmaggie hadn't been developed, we would have tried to manage on flooded river irrigation or whatever it might be, or simply dryland agriculture.
Probably that was happening. There was river pumping happening down there before the dam was built. And I'm just trying to think if there's much significant dairying now on what you would call, well, non-irrigated. Obviously there are. There's pockets of dairying that have subsisted quite successfully up Cairn River. There's other dairying around, and obviously South Gippsland's extremely successful in its dairying without the irrigation. So we would have had dairying, but it possibly wouldn't have been as wildly successful and productive as it is.
And then that cascades into the broader economy to generate wealth elsewhere.
It did. I forget how many dairy factories there were in Maffra at the highlight. High top points. It's now Murray Goulburn, which is the one huge factory. But there's at least four major dairy factories were operating out of Maffra before.
Just out of Maffra on its own.
Just out of Maffra. And then you had a dairy factory that these were cooperative. You had a combination of cooperatives, which were farmer-owned, and those from the Melbourne Fresh Food and Storage Company. And they were operating factories. I think they operated Newry and Hayfield was a cooperative. There's a Nambrock Denison dairy factory I found around. There were huge numbers of small dairy factories, cooperative driven. And they were incredibly important in the economy.
Mm.
But Maffra, yes, Maffra. Hayfield was the sawmilling town with 6, 7, 8 sawmills at one point, and Maffra was the dairying town with a lot of factories, some of which were cooperative, some of which were privately owned.
As you say, many of us might look at Lake Glenmaggie now, or Glenmaggie Weir, and think of it as a place for speedboats when it's full, or a place for a summer holiday over the Christmas break, but its implications, the implications on it for so many walks of modern Gippsland life are immense.
Incredibly immense, yes.
Linda, thanks for telling us a bit of the story. Good on you.
Pleasure.